You might remember your home economics class as a requirement that just taught you how to make blueberry muffins or maybe sew a pillowcase. But the original founders of the science of home economics were in the business of changing the world. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller today. Thanks for listening on the Ideas Network. Our next guest is Danielle Dreilinger. She's a journalist and the 2018 Knight Wallace Journalism Fellow at the University of Michigan. Her work has appeared in many outlets like the New York Times, the Atlantic, USA Today, and we're going to talk about her new book. It's called The Secret History of Home Economics, How Trailblazing Women Harness the Power of Home and Change the Way We Live. What was your home ec experience like? Did you find it useful at the time? What about now? Do you think it's important? Join in the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Danielle, thank you so much for being with us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I enjoyed this book. The minute it crossed my desk, I've got to talk to this author because I loved home ec. And I had home ec in the 70s, so it's a lot different than it was in other times. But I really took to it, but not everybody did, of course. What was your experience in home ec?
Well, so I did take it in middle school. It was required in New York State where I grew up. And I recall it was two semesters. It was one semester each year. And we had shop the other semester. And in fact, the shop teacher and the home economics teacher were married, which I remembered because I just recently found my middle school report cards. And, you know, the funny thing is I don't remember much of the class. I remember sewing a stuffed animal, and I chose the most elaborate one. It was a frozen banana. So you had it a peel, and you would peel the peel down, and the banana was blue and shivering.
Oh my gosh.
And I brought this home on the bus in middle school, and I was so proud of it. And the boys grabbed it and, you know, made fun of it as pretty much, you know, the way that you would expect. And I was just mortified.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that myself. But in our school, it was, you know, the girls took, well, I shouldn't say that. It was, you had a choice of home ec or shop or band. And that was it. You chose one, and that was pretty much it. So it wasn't very equitable like yours was. So that's kind of nice. Why did you decide to research home economics? I mean, I had no idea it went back as far as it did. What was your catalyst on that?
So my catalyst really came from the outside, which is I was looking for a book idea that would encompass history and education and race, gender, and class, and also food, because I spent a lot of time cooking, and I thought, well, books are difficult and take a long time. It should touch on my hobbies as well as my professional interests. I was covering education for a newspaper at the time. And so I just thought about all this, and I thought, oh, home economics, like the classic taught girls how to cook, because that's what I knew it as too. And even at that moment, I thought, you know, why isn't this back by now? And look at all the trends in our culture over the last 20-odd years, right? Look at the excitement over HGTV and the Food Network and the pushback against standardized tests-based education and the fears of adulting and, you know, parenting stressors. Shouldn't this all be back by now? And then, you know, I started looking into the history, and the first thing I learned was that one of the founders of home economics was the first woman to go to MIT. And so that was the moment I realized, like, whoa, there is so much more here than anybody knows. And in fact, there is.
Yes, absolutely. So tell us how home economics started. Ellen Swallow Roberts, is that right? Do I remember
Richards,
that correctly?
Richards.
Yeah, Richards, okay. So,
right.
So tell us about
the very first, the very first founding mother of home economics was actually a little before, it was the 1840s. Catherine Beecher, who is a pioneering women's educator, wrote a book basically saying that home economics wasn't called that yet, but, you know, all of these housekeeping jobs, as well as physical education, as well as medicine, should be taught in school to girls, as well as, you know, these elite intellectual topics such as Latin and Greek. And over the next few decades, it gradually, you know, schools did begin to teach cooking and sewing and, you know, those sort of hands-on topics. But at the same time, you had this enormous expansion of education after the Civil War, far beyond the white male elite. And so people were talking about, well, what should people learn? You know, if you are a woman, a someone who's interested in science, an African American in the South, what should you learn? And there were people such as W.E.B. Du Bois who thought, well, the traditional elite curriculum should be open to everybody. And then there were people who said that no, people should learn, you know, topics that are going to help them in their adult lives. The land grant college system had started. You were, you know, educating future farmers and, you know, farm families. And at the same time, then you had people saying, well, but wait, homemaking, housekeeping, all of these tasks, they're not dumb. Like, they require thinking. They can be done efficiently. They can be done scientifically. And then at the end of the century, you have Ellen Swallow Richards, who was the first woman to go to MIT. Simultaneously, you had Margaret Murray Washington, who was Booker T. Washington's wife and ran home economics at Tuskegee. And, you know, of some other people as well coming, well, Margaret Murray Washington was working on a parallel track because of racism in the larger society, but you have people coming together to create the field of home economics. And what they were, their project was really twofold. They were trying to bring science and efficiency and better methods into the home so that the people, almost always women or people of color, who were caring for the house could do those jobs faster and concentrate on what really mattered so that they would have more time to study, to do paid employment, to spend time with their kids, to be involved in civic activities, you know, anything. And they also wanted to create a range of careers for women where women would be accepted and would be able to carve out their own space because these careers were connected to jobs that they had traditionally done in the home, such as, you know, hotel management, dietetics, early childhood education, fashion merchandising and marketing, food media. So this is, you know, it was this two-part project, and I think that's part of what made it so powerful.
Okay. We did get a call from Ken in Libertyville, Illinois. He's got a comment for you. Hi, Ken.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Hey, how are you? Oh, I wanted to say that, all right, so I'm 41, and I took home economics in middle school as well, and I sewed that very same frozen banana that you did.
Oh, my gosh,
in
really?
Approximately 1992, probably. And so, yeah, it must be a, you know, and this is in northern Illinois, so it's, you know, not too far away, and I just couldn't believe it. I was like the frozen banana. It's just, it lit up a memory that I haven't thought about in a really long time, so thank you.
You know, I have not even thought about looking up, like, the sewing curriculum of the time, and I really should, because, yeah, I'm a couple years older than you. And so it must have just been like a pattern that teachers could use at the time, right? Of course, it was before the internet. So it must have been put out by some magazine or so. Oh my God, that's amazing.
That's great. Thank you, Ken. Appreciate you sharing that with us. There's going to be a surge of people Googling frozen banana patterns right now. So tell us a little bit about what those first home ec classes were like. What did they cover?
That's a great question. So there were different in different places. What you had in black colleges and the land grant colleges, it was pretty much straight vocational education. So you had, you know, learning by doing. So at Tuskegee, for instance, there was a laundry, and you had, you know, people who were taking laundry classes were doing the laundry for the entire institution, and they worked on that, and they worked on how to do it better, and it was all very hands-on. In the early 1900s, one of the first projects of the American Home Economics Association was to put together curricula, and so that was mostly for K-12, though it was also for colleges, depending. And so let me, you know, something. I'm going to look up one of these. So I've collected just this enormous numbers of curricula and so on, and I'm just going to pull up one of the early. Okay, here we have 1911. This is the domestic science education in Nebraska, for instance. And so this was just, this was K-12. It was called the Crete Plan. And you had people like recipe optional. The pupil should faithfully try the recipe given a few times, after which if she shows or anyone can tell her a better way of making the article, she is at liberty to use that method. So you would have people in lab classes basically learning how to cook or learning how to sew. For cooking, you would also have the chemistry. So you had these textbooks, right, that's like the physics of household equipment, the chemistry of cooking. And they would talk about, for instance, I just wrote about this, that the protein composition of gelatin and what makes things gel and how it's not actually the same as it's a special kind of protein that works differently, for instance. And they would test, for instance, different ways of making bread to see, you know, how long you let it rise, what the difference would be with the difference in temperature. So it was often quite experimental and sort of lab based.
Because it was science. It didn't say this is so you can be a better, wife. That wasn't the thing that they were pushing. It was the science behind it, wasn't it?
Right. And certainly, I mean, Ellen Richards got excited about science in the home after a Boston school superintendent sneered at her and said, like, when she was working as a chemist, and said, what good will this do women in the kitchen? And she thought, well, most women are in the kitchen, and this is going to do them a lot of good. And so she thought about them being smarter consumers through science. She herself, her own house she treated as a lab. So she brought the gas meter, which was typically in the basement, up on the main level so she could keep track of how much gas the house was using. She had an early version of a vacuum cleaner because she saw that it was more efficient and better at getting rid of dust than sweeping. And she envisioned, you know, being able to test the cream of tartar to make sure that it was of good quality. Because, you know, this is an era before public health consumer safety provision, and home economists were very involved in getting public safety consumer laws passed, you know, pure food and drug laws. So people could be selling you absolutely anything and saying it was cream of tartar.
Right. And they were.
And they were, right. They were whitening flour with lead.
Mm-hmm. All kinds of crazy stuff. And I believe that one of the things she was testing was the wallpaper with arsenic, which people had no clue that was going on.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was also elements of home economics, such as interior design, that they had a harder time figuring out because this group of women in the American Home Economics Association was, you know, because they were scientists, they had trouble sort of figuring out how to bring in the more, like, the visual art element of what they were doing, and ended up looking to universal laws of design, which, you know, like, one assumes those don't actually really exist, but they were trying to standardize that as well.
Mm-hmm. It definitely a wide ranging. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this after the break. And we're talking with Danielle Dreilinger. She's a journalist focusing on education. And her new book is called The Secret History of Home Economics, How Trailblazing Women Harness the Power of Home and Change the Way We Live. What was home ec like when you were in school? Do you have a degree in home economics or a similar field? How did you feel about its evolution? Well, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email, ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back right after the news. This This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're talking about the history of home economics with our guest today. She's journalist Danielle Dreilinger, and we're talking about her new book, The Secret History of Home Economics, How Trailblazing Women Harness the Power of Home and Change the Way We Live. What's your experience been with home economics? Do you think there's a place for it in today's classroom? If so, what should it be teaching? Join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Danielle, I think we're going to go right to the phone. We have a comment from a listener, Jeannie in Sheboygan. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. I am a graduate of the School of Human Ecology, formerly Home Ec, at the University of Wisconsin. And I was just talking with a friend of mine who is also a graduate of the school. She was a child development graduate, and she's now she's like a clinical social worker, and she does psychotherapy. And she said that so much of what she learned as an undergraduate was applicable today to her work. And I guess when you think about what should be taught in younger, you know, at younger levels, certainly, you know, what it takes to be a member of a family and getting along with your brothers and sisters and that kind of stuff. I think somebody certainly with a human ecology degree today gets a well-rounded education, and certainly it's useful for living in general.
Well, thank you, Jeannie. Danielle, what do you
and
think?
Actually, I have a question. I have a question for you, Jeannie. So, okay, so first of all, just the point for everybody. So after World War II, you get a lot more of this, these family dynamics into home economics and, you know, learning about how to be a part of a family. And, you know, and one of the questions that I've had recently, you know, so a lot of these specialties that were jobs in home economics, you can now just study on their own. I mean, that's been the case for years. Like, you can become a dietitian without taking home economics, human ecology coursework. And I'm really curious what you and maybe your friends got out of having this broader grounding that, you know, covered a whole bunch of areas that wasn't just, you know, the starting as a dietitian or starting as a clinical, as, you know, a therapist, for instance.
Well, I think what she was telling me was that there were a number of professors in her undergraduate years, and she basically kind of charted her own course and picked her own program. But she had professors who had done a lot of research. And I think that's something that's very characteristic of the program at the university in the School of Human Ecology, that it's research based. And for me, I was a home ec generalist, and I ended up having three careers in fundraising, human resources, and training and development. And now I'm a writer. So it's kind of crazy, but I feel that the generalist education that I got was really important for helping me prepare for a variety of fields. And I felt that I could be successful in all of them because I had a good background. And that's what the school gave me many, many years ago.
Well, thank you, Jeannie. Appreciate sharing that. Yeah. So, Danielle, that's kind of from the beginning, a lot of women did use the study of home economics as sort of like a, you know, a back door almost into the career world. You found that to be true quite often, didn't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. And so I know you guys were just talking with a food media expert, and that was an enormous... So Lillian Muller-Gilbreth, the mom in Cheaper by the Dozen, she's one of the women I write about in the book because she was an engineer and an efficiency expert and a businesswoman. But then after her husband died, which, I mean, spoiler alert, happens at the end of Cheaper by the Dozen, she couldn't get hired by her former clients because they just could. This was the 1920s, and they couldn't have a woman coming into, you know, a bottle factory telling the men what to do. And so she switched over into home economics and drew on her work and really mostly her husband's work about efficiency in the home because they would listen to her talking about efficiency in the kitchen and in the home. And in fact, her children later wrote, you know, mother said that if the way to enter business was through the kitchen door, that's how she'd enter. Mm-hmm. And this was true of an enormous number of business women. They got jobs in food media. They got jobs in customer service at utility companies and stores and fabric companies. And they became the marketing experts because they had this knowledge of, you know, quote unquote, Mrs. Consumer. So they would test recipes. They would write recipes. Betty Crocker was a fictional character. Sorry, everybody.
I think we know. We're good.
Okay. Well, not everybody does. She sucks. A lot of people think that there was a Betty Crocker on the time, but that, you know, she was carried on by other people after her death or something. But she had a team of home economists writing recipes and writing radio scripts and cookbooks and advertising copies. And this was an important way for women to work in business.
Great. And let's go back to the phone. We've got Christopher in Eau Claire with a comment. Hi, Christopher.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, thanks.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I think home economics should be just the beginning. I think economics should be taught at the K-12 level, not just in the home, but, you know, as well as, you know, how our nation's economy works. I think we should cover the whole spectrum on it. I think people would elect an entirely different set of politicians if economics were a core curriculum in our country. I really do.
Okay, thanks for the comment, Christopher. Danielle?
Yeah, so it's interesting that you say that because, first of all, personal finance, you know, is and always has been part of home economics, and starting with the household budget. So that's been a part of the field. And, you know, I have wondered whether that is a way that home economics could become mandatory again, which is that I think at last count, 20 of the states, I can't remember, Wisconsin is among them, required have a personal finance requirement for kids graduating high school. And that class can be taught by a business teacher, can be taught by the football coach for that matter, sometimes, but it can be taught in home economics, or often it's now called family and consumer sciences, or FACS now. So, yeah, they definitely would agree with you that just knowing how money works and the economy works is crucial for anybody to just be able to live their lives. I mean, look at teenagers making decisions about taking on college debt, for instance. It gets such an important decision that is going to affect their entire adulthood.
Absolutely. There were many instances where the women in home ec sort of fell short in their values, you know, especially when it came to the treatment of women of color. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So the home economics reflected and, you know, sometimes and exacerbated the racism that's just part of United States history altogether. And this was something I really went looking for and pretty much immediately found it. So, for instance, the founding conference of the home economics movement was the Lake Placid conferences, started in 1899, and they were put together by Melville Dewey of the library cataloging system and his wife. And I noticed certainly that the people were all white. Well, it turns out that's because the Dewey's resort was segregated. They wouldn't allow African-Americans and they wouldn't allow Jews. And in fact, Melville Dewey eventually got in trouble for this. And this just became a through line, is that women of color were central to home economics and they were also excluded from it. So the American Home Economics Association was segregated, allowed its southern chapters to be segregated until the 1960s, when they finally took a stand against it. And yet, even though the black colleges of Margaret Mary Washington were foundational in establishing home economics as a career field for black women from, the 1880s. So, yeah, there's it's not always a very nice history. The co-founder of the American Dietetics Association worked for the Kellogg, not the cereal part, the Medispa part, and they supported eugenics. That's that entity, and she wrote these healthy vegetarian cooking columns in a magazine next to the most horrible things about sterilizing the unfit and so on. And it's something that I will say that the field is very aware of today and certainly very concerned about making sure that anybody in education, the public school students are largely, I don't remember what the exact statistics are, but if your teachers are all white people, you're not reaching the kids who you actually have in the classroom. And Home Economics is very aware of that.
And how are things, that's changed just recently, right? Things are definitely becoming a little more equitable.
Right. So, it's something like many organizations that had white leadership from early on, it has been a slow process. But for instance, there is an association of Black family and consumer science leaders that has been around for, I think it's 30 years at this point. You can still study home economics, family consumer sciences at many HBCUs, historically Black universities. And I've certainly seen a lot of conversation, certainly within the field. And at last count, more than 3 million public school students still took home economics in the U.S. every year. There's been a lot of excitement in that community among those teachers to the work that I did in my book in really uncovering the forgotten history of Black and Latina women in the field. Incidentally, also in terms of where you can take home economics, I would be remiss not to say University of Wisconsin still has family and consumer sciences at some of its campuses. So you can still study that and major in it today.
Yeah, it's a pretty strong program. And I know WPR for a number of years, many, many decades, had a homemaker show on that was extremely popular. And it was basically a way to get the word out, what the colleges were teaching to other people that couldn't be at the college. So, yeah, very strong that.
Yeah, and that's the extension program, which is also still around. The community extension this year, community education, adult education. And, so you don't have to be able to go to college to be able to learn what people are learning.
Absolutely. So we don't have tons of time here to go through the history. And again, I recommend people read the book because it's very interesting. But what are some of the innovations that home economists brought to us that we may not realize, that changed our lives and how we live it? Some of the biggies.
School lunch.
School lunch
is a big one.
Yes.
Right. So the school lunch was a home economics project from really early on because it it knocked a lot of birds out with, I've screwed up my metaphor, but it accomplished a lot of goals at once. So schools were built without cafeterias. If you go to an older school, much older school at this point, that hasn't been renovated. Because if you lived in the city, you went home for lunch, or you just bought food from like a push cart on the street. And if you lived in the country, you would bring your lunch and eat outside. And children were malnourished. They were not getting enough to eat. And as we all know, kids who are hungry can't learn. So home economists saw this as an opportunity to just improve children's lives and the health of future adults and to improve education by feeding kids at school. Simultaneously, it created a new job category of school lunch specialists. On top of that, it gave them the opportunity to teach about nutrition and about calories and to, teach their ideas of what people should be eating, some of which is, I think today, non-controversial information about, hey, it's important to have protein as well, in all the food groups. Some of which was, speaking of cultural, cultural imperialism and racism, was saying, this is this Anglo way and that's what everybody should eat, no matter what they're eating at home. But yes, this was a project that they undertook over many years, and in the Great Depression, it finally got federal support. And, you know, to this day, it is a major part of what the home economics movement has accomplished. And, you know, there's still, like, I get the emails from the My Plate project at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which is a holdover from the Bureau of Home Economics.
In your book, that you write that you found a lot of support from Home Ec for the people that you talked to, but there was a disconnect in that the schools aren't necessarily offering it. It's not a priority. So you have a list of suggestions about how Home Ec can become more in schools, how important it is. Why don't you start talking about some of those suggestions that that you have in mind?
Right. Well, and I should say that, you know, I'm a journalist, and I was not writing this book intending to, you know, promote home economics. As in, I didn't go in saying, like, oh, obviously, this is great. We should have it. But
right.
There's just everybody I talked to said we should bring that back. And everybody I talked to. And so I have some suggestions because I felt like I had to, you know, why bring up a problem if you're not going to talk about some solutions? And one is to make it mandatory. And as complicated and challenging and tall an order that as orders that can be, you know, the problem with it being an elective, which it still isn't, you know, many places, is because even though it is now illegal, thanks to Title IX, it's illegal to have girls take home ec and boys take shop.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have these real gendered patterns of who does the work around the home. And even though there are plenty of boys taking home economics now, and, you know, who thought it was ridiculous when I talked to them that, you know, it would be considered just a girls' project, it's still really disproportional. I would say I observe maybe 3/4 girls in the classes. So it's just harder to make if this is information that every kid should learn, then every kid should learn it. So that's one piece. And another is that I really encourage this particular, you know, the founder's vision of home economics as being scientific, as being smart, as, you know, looking not just at the micro of how you do a task around the house, but the macro, the systems level of why these matter, right? Like how your home spending fits into the overall economy. And I've seen teachers do this, like how knowing how to sew a button back on your pants matters, because let's look at the global fashion industry. So I also would recommend that, you know, that's the style, I suppose, of home economics that we should be encouraging, because it's just so interesting, and it's so thought-provoking, and it's so engaging. And, you know, I think it's a better argument to make space for that within the, you know, contested space of the school day than, quote-unquote, just life skills or, quote, just career skills, as important as those also are.
I like your just, because they really are a basis for so many other things in life, aren't they? I mean, one of your points was, you know, embrace these life skills as a way to prepare for a career.
Right. And, you know, look, if we're going to go really deep on this, this ties into just all of our debates about what's the purpose of school. And this is something that we've gone back and forth and forth and back on as a country. Is it from the early 80s, we've been looking at, oh, the purpose of school is to create, you know, people who can do neuroscience, basically. And then you have people saying, but you also need to be able to find a job, or, I mean, we're talking about civics, about shaping the young of the country who are going to be our future adults. So it's one of the things that makes this topic fascinating, is that it really hits at these core arguments about, like, what school is for, what home means, how we can have happier lives. You know, it's just big, big questions.
Absolutely. I hope that there are some school administrators out there listening and rethinking about what they think that home ec is. And I mean, is home ec a good name? Is should we go back to it? I know there's a lot of different other names that they've been calling it lately.
Right. So that is one of my more from fairly early on, in my reporting, after maybe the first year of the 3 years I put into this, I concluded pretty quickly that, yes, I think home economics is a perfectly fine name, and we should go back to it. Because colleges started, you know, renaming things like human ecology back in the late 60s, because at that point, home economics had gone from being a field that was respected to being a field that was denigrated and, you know, considered as the line is just stitching and stirring. And so, you know, they just, the home economists did not have success in, you know, tackling those stereotypes, and people were really determined to denigrate home economics. So they ended up renaming it things like family and consumer sciences. But I think it, the evidence is pretty clear that it backfired because people don't know what these other names are.
Yeah, and they're all different.
Say home economics.
Yes.
To bring that back, not realizing that it's still here because it's called something else.
Right.
So
right.
It just seems like, you know, just like the easiest solution here is just go back to the name people know it as and, you know, work on the perceptions again.
There you go. I think you made some really good points. I appreciate all the work that you did digging up all this history. It's fascinating. And thank you so much for being with us, Danielle.
Yes, thank you for having me.
You bet. We've been talking with Danielle Dreilinger. She is a journalist focusing on education. Her new book is called The Secret History of Home Economics, How Trailblazing Women Harnessed the Power of Home and Changed the Way We Live. Our show tomorrow is going to take a little bit of an Olympic flavor. We'll get a lesson in rowing from UW-Madison's women's coach. And then at 11:45, WPR sports reporter Megan Hart will be back with us. And then we're going to get some suggestions about books about the Olympics. That's all starting at 11, right here on the Ideas Network. I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller this week. Stay well.